Hey everyone, Hunter here. Just wanted to break in before the episode to let y'all know that I made a mistake when I said that this was the 14th episode. It's actually the 15th episode, so I didn't want anyone thinking we were, you know, repeating ourselves or anything. Anyway, enjoy the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 14th episode of the Home Videodrome Podcast, back from a holiday sabbatical. I'm your host, Hunter Dusing, and with me, as always, is the lovely and talented James Dirks.
It's nice to be back, guys.
Yes, it is. you know, over the holidays, like when Christmas hits, not much comes out on DVD and Blu-ray and such.
Like, surprisingly small amounts of stuff that's worth talking about.
Right.
It's odd because I was expecting when it came up to this, it was just going to be a boatload of, oh man, we're going to have so much stuff to talk about.
Right.
But it really isn't.
No, it's like a lot of little re-releases, like little things like, oh, Sid and Nancy's been a Best Buy exclusive for a few weeks, but now it's not. Yay.
Right. Yeah. But also stuff like, you know, Justified just came out. It would have been cool. You know, talking about that would have been cool because that's such a good show.
Yeah, there were little things here and there. And, you know, we got a great TV release this week with Boardwalk Empire.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But, but you know, like last week I wanted to do the show, but I looked at the releases and I was like, no, let's just take another week off. Because
right.
I just got back into town from Dallas and I was just like, yeah, I don't want to bother with it because
right.
it would be such a short nothing show. I mean, we'd be talking more about our weekend or something.
Exactly, exactly. Because I mean, because I look at it and it's like Justified and Contagion and Alfred Hitchcock Presents Season 5 is finally out.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason this is worth mentioning and the reason this is a big deal is because this finally, for the first time ever, The Man from the South is available on DVD.
Really?
And that's the one with Peter Lorre and Steve McQueen. This is I've had a version of it on VHS for years. Just because I'm a really, really big fan of that episode, I've found and purchased various different copies of it. You know, I have, there's a VHS tape that has it plus three other episodes on it. And there are ones that have like, the guy from Casablanca. Why am I forgetting his name? I love him. He was also in Paths of Glory. Claude Rains.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
There's a Claude Rains. There's a, the guy from, I'm forgetting all these names today and I'll tell you why in a second. The guy from, the Strange Love. Hey, buddy, that's private property. I can't remember his name. He was in an episode of Hitchcock Presents called A Dip in the Pool that is absolutely fantastic.
Oh, you're thinking of Flava Flav.
Yes. Yes, I am. No, it's based off of a short story by Raoul Dahl, as most episodes. Oh, it's Keenan Wynn.
Keenan Wynn. Oh, he's great. Yeah.
Keenan Wynn and Faye Ray.
Keenan Wynn, Flava Flav, same thing, you know.
Yeah, basically, yeah. But it was one of these weird things where it's like you could get these, but they were just in this odd little collection that was only on VHS. And Man from the South, I thought was on this one, but it might be the season 4 because I'm searching it now and it's not showing it.
Really?
Which is kind of upsetting to me because I knew that this season was finally coming out. But if you find it with The Man from the South, it is so, so very much worth getting just for that episode.
Is that your favorite episode of the show?
Probably, yeah.
Because I haven't seen Hitchcock Presents since I was a kid. I've seen a few episodes here and there, but I don't think I've seen that one.
Right, right. It's what's his name? Peter Lorre bets Steve McQueen his a new car against his pinky from his left hand as to whether or not he can light his Zippo lighter 10 times in a row without missing once.
Ooh.
It's really, really really outstanding, and I'm searching for it, and it's showing it's season 5, episode 15, but for some reason, the summary of season 5 on Amazon is not showing it, but it is on season 5, and unless there is some absolute, oh yeah, Man from the South. Man from the South is on this. Yeah, it is on it. It is very well worth getting. So
good.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna have to check that one out because I'm a big Peter Lorre fan, and of course Steve McQueen.
Right, right. You know. Well, and Justified season 2 is out from that, and it's just amazing.
I need to see that show. I've never seen it. I'm really bad about catching up with TV.
Right. Well, it's a really good show. It's a really good show. And speaking of, right now we are. I'm really glad we're recording today because Clarkson and I on Thursday recorded a really good show.
What was it?
It was
about?
A great conversation. It was. It was originally going to be the AFI 100 Years, 100 Passions.
Oh yeah, you were going to do that.
We looked at it and we were like, between the two of us, we hadn't seen half of them. Like yeah. I had seen like 30 off the list.
It would have been like, oh, this one. Huh, okay, next.
That, then this. Then, okay, fine. But then, so we decided to change it to the 100 Years, 100 Thrills. Because, not thrills, I mean cheers.
Cheers.
Because each of us had seen like, you know, 75, 80 of them. So it was about, but again, it's a really great conversation. We're going to end up having to recap it because we're going to do the top quotes next time. And we talked about their list of, you know, 100 screen legends where they considered Humphrey Bogart to be considerably more of a screen legend than John Wayne.
What?
Yeah. I mean, Humphrey Bogart was number one. John Wayne was, hold on. Their female list was pretty dead on, but, hold on.
I knew just who John Wayne was before I knew who Humphrey Bogart was.
Let me read you through the list of it. Number one, Humphrey Bogart. Number two, Cary Grant. Okay. Number three, James Stewart. Number four, Marlon Brando. Number five, Fred Astaire. Number six, Henry Fonda. Number seven, Clark Gable. Number eight, James Cagney. Number nine, Spencer Tracy. Number 10, Charlie Chaplin. Number 11, Gary Cooper. Number 12, Gregory Peck. Number 13, John Wayne.
What the f...
Yeah.
That's comical to me.
It really is.
Like, so... I'm sorry, but John Wayne is, he transcends the medium. I mean, he is Americana. If this is the American Film Institute, you gotta put fucking John Wayne above Charlie Chaplin.
Oh God, yes, way
you know?
Above it. Uh-huh.
I mean, above Gregory Peck. Above Henry Fonda, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, there are a lot of these who are just amazing, but it's like John Wayne, like Humphrey Bogart is still a man.
Humphrey Bogart is probably, I mean, he's up there, you know. I mean, yeah, he's top
but,
10
but
for sure.
John Wayne is just a different, he's a category in and of himself.
Yeah.
So it's just bizarre to me because, I mean, like, John Wayne isn't a person anymore.
No.
He is, you know, he is legend.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my Lord, it's the fact that the most diehard, conservative, over-the-top folks forgive the fact that he didn't serve in the Army during World War II because of all of the patriotic movies he made. I mean, that's like, that, seriously, there are folks out there that will... I have heard say that his contribution was the uplifting patriotic films that he made.
Yeah.
And it's just absolutely amazing. I mean, that he has reached that level of transcendence.
Yeah. His name is synonymous with American Pie.
Oh,
with, you know, the national anthem. I mean, John Wayne is of like the face of like, you know, the rugged American male, you know?
Yeah, I mean, when you...
The idea of the rugged American male, you know?
Yeah, some could argue that the modern ideal of the rugged American male began with John Wayne.
I mean, he certainly... It was birthed of that. I mean...
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's maddening.
Like, but, Fred Astaire?
Yeah, Fred Astaire
like, that's
above
the one,
him.
Like, I wouldn't even put him in the top 10. Like...
No.
I mean, he's a legend, no doubt, but...
Uh-huh.
You know, you ask, if you go ask anybody, if you have them recognize, like, not even the names, but the faces, yeah. Like, do you
right,
know who
right.
this guy is? And you show them Fred Astaire and John Wayne, which one do you know? Which one do you recognize quicker? They're going to recognize John Wayne.
Oh, yeah.
More so than Fred
oh,
Astaire.
Oh, God, yes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean, oh, I think it, Fred Astaire is really well known by, like, you know, classic movie buffs, you know?
Yes, and only within that classic movie buffs thing. It's not even something, like, if you're into newer movies, I wouldn't be surprised if you didn't know who he was.
Right.
But I mean, it's...
But everyone knows who John Wayne is.
Yeah.
Like, you know, even I'm sure even young kids who are out of touch and have never seen a John Wayne movie know who John Wayne is.
Yeah, it's one of those shocking things. But, you know, after John Wayne, it's Laurence Olivier, Gene Kelly, Orson Welles, Kirk Douglas, James Dean.
James Dean.
Is number 18.
Awful low for... Okay, James Dean is top 10 for this reason and this reason only, is that girls, like, younger than me... You know, like my, you know, my sister's age and younger have posters of him on their wall. And they may never have never even seen a James Dean movie.
And let's put this in real perspective. They might never have seen one of the three movies.
Yeah, I mean three movies. He's
he had four movies that, you know, he was uncredited
in Fixed, like, Bayonets.
Bayonets, Sailor Beware, Has Anyone Seen My Gal, Trouble Along the Way. He was uncredited, but he made three movies.
Yeah.
And you show a picture of James Dean to anyone, they're like, oh, yeah, I know who that is.
Yeah. I mean, my sister, I'm willing to bet, has never seen a James Dean movie, but she had posters of him. Uh-huh. Had, like, you know, quotes from him. I'm pretty sure she's never seen Rebel Without a Cause or Giant,
right.
or East of Eden.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Let alone Fixed Bayonets.
But you know, after Dean, you've got Burt Lancaster, the Marx Brothers, Buster Keaton, Sidney Poitier, Robert Mitchum, Edward G. Robinson, and number 25, William Holden.
Number 25.
Yeah. But with the women, I'm, like, almost in total agreement, you know, because going from 25 up, Ava Gardner, Mary Pickford, Carol Lombard, Jean Harlow, Sophia Loren, Lauren Bacall, Rita Hayworth, Shirley Temple, Lillian Gish, Vivian Leigh, Mae West, Ginger Rogers, Grace Kelly, Claudette Colbert, Barbara Stanwyck, then the top 10, Joan Crawford, Marlena Dietrich, Judy Garland, Elizabeth Taylor, Marilyn Monroe, Greta Garbo, Ingrid Bergman, Audrey Hepburn, Betty Davis, and Katharine Hepburn. I think they nailed the female list. Yeah,
no complaints.
But the males list is just, it's weird.
I think Monroe may be the most iconic out of them.
Oh yes,
but but that list is pretty. There was nothing that made me go, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But there's so many of these that are just all over the place.
Yeah.
But when we, you know, we were looking at, you know, the 100 passions. And the problem with the AFI list that Clarkson and I have discovered is they give themselves a definition that's so wide open.
Well, I was listening to your thrills list.
Uh-huh.
If they had reworded that thrills list just a bit,
yeah,
like not the list, but the criteria,
yeah,
there would have been no issue with that. Like,
right.
I mean, because there were every film listed off had a sequence in it that I would consider massively chilling or thrilling or whatever, but you know, but the list made it sound like we're looking for a slamming, blood thumping through rat, you know, like,
adrenaline, whose overall adrenaline thump inducing impact causes a physical as well as emotional reaction.
Yeah, I mean, I like, you know, in, you know, and then they, you know, like Night of the Hunter was on there, and there is a scene in Night of the Hunter that elicits that reaction from me, like,
yeah,
but it,
yeah,
it's, but the movie itself doesn't really have that vibe. It has a very fairy tale, like bad things through the eyes of a kid vibe. It doesn't,
right,
like, you know, there is one scene where he's chasing the kids into the river screaming at them that is that. But,
yeah,
you know, it's,
but,
almost...
But you also get crap, like, you know, then you go to the 100 Passions, and the list is like, you know, regardless of genre, a romantic bond between two or more characters whose actions and or intentions provide the heart of the film's narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And that allows you to have shit like Vertigo at 18 and, you know, Casablanca and stuff like that on here. But it's like these weird lists where you're able to shift from, hold on, let me give you one of the weird shifts that they have on it. From Here to Eternity, this is 20, 19, 18, 17, 16, and 15. Actually, I'll give you from 20 down.
Okay.
From Here to Eternity, Ghost, Vertigo, Moonstruck, Singing in the Rain, African Queen, Out of Africa, My Fair Lady, Annie Hall, City Lights, Love Story, It's a Wonderful Life, Dr. Zhivago, The Way We Were, An Affair to Remember, Roman Holiday, West Side Story, Gone with the Wind, and Casablanca. By and large, pretty good, but a lot of that list is just like, what, really? You're putting Vertigo and Singing in the Rain on the same list?
Well, and it's like, those movies aren't about the relationships in them.
No,
those movies are about the things around, like, you know, Vertigo is about, like, obsession, you know, and Singing in the Rain is about the transition from silent to sound. You know.
But but the thing is, the 100 Years, 100 Cheers is what we ended up really talking about. But it's when it's like movies that inspire with characters of vision and conviction who face adversity and often make personal sacrifices for the greater good. Whether these films end happily or not, they are ultimately triumphant, filling both audiences with hope and triumph and the power of the human spirit and potential. And the top five on this gives you an idea how wacky this goddamn list is. Actually, I'll give you the top 10. Saving Private Ryan, Miracle on 34th Street, Breaking Away, The Grapes of Wrath, E.T., Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, Rocky, Schindler's List, To Kill a Mockingbird, and It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life sure seems to show up a lot on these lists.
Yeah, but that is just such a weird list.
Yeah, it is.
But, I mean, that's what we went through. So next time we're going to go over our reactions to them a little bit.
Okay.
It's such an odd thing. But, yeah, I mean, that's how... I don't know, man. It just doesn't make sense.
Mm-mm.
But this week, I will say, this week's list of video releases is pretty cool. I mean, there's actually some good stuff to talk about here.
Yeah, what's funny is I haven't seen any of the new releases, and I know you have, so this is good.
Uh-huh.
I've only seen some of the stupid stuff being re-released. So,
right.
But have you seen any good movies lately, though?
I actually saw a bunch during the past couple weeks, because like Hope was out of town, so I didn't really have anything to do. And I saw, like, Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, Mission Impossible, Super 8, 30 Minutes or Less, which I still need to rewatch because I fell asleep. X-Men, Captain America, Devil's Double, Sherlock Holmes.
I wanted to see Devil's Double.
Devil's Double, my problem with Devil's Double is that when you base stuff on history, on real stuff, history very rarely provides compelling third acts.
No.
Yeah. I mean, there are a million fascinating and amazingly cool things that have happened out there, but not many of them have something that builds to an end that really, really works.
Right.
You know? And that's really what I felt like with Devil's Double. It was like great performances. It looked great.
Yeah.
Really fantastic start. But it just...
It kind of farts out at the end.
Yeah, really about going... And it's straight up third act that kind of falls apart.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely one where this is one of the few times that... Yeah, I really tend to believe the rule that Billy Wilder put out there that if you have a problem in your third act, the real problem is in the first act. I honestly believe that if you have your story set up properly, that you can write yourself out of any issues at the end. This is one where the ultimate history of it kind of limited what they could do.
Yeah. Well, because like on paper, it sounds like a really neat idea for a film, but I was really curious as to whether or not it would work.
It is a great idea and a really fantastic scenario.
And Dominic Cooper's a good actor. I mean,
he was also
Howard Stark in
Yes, he was. He was in
Captain America.
And boy, talk about a movie that sort of peters out at the very, very end.
Which one?
Captain America.
Oh yeah,
I liked it, but the last line was like, "What? Huh?"
When.
I have a date.
Oh, yeah, I had a date. Oh.
Like, well, oh, God, really? That's where you end it?
Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of tired of seeing Samuel L. Jackson show up at the end of Marvel movies.
Yes.
Yeah, it's getting kind of old. It was kind of cool in Iron Man. Now it's just like, okay, get it out of the way. Yeah, Sammy
J,
great.
You know that it's coming.
Yeah.
You just absolutely know that it's on its way. Mm-hmm. And so it's sort of, okay.
That's what's nice about X-Men First Class. No Sammy J.
Yeah, oh, but X-Men First Class, I really think nailed it.
That's the best X-Men movie.
It really, I honestly kind of got to believe.
Full stop.
I really liked 2. I think 2 was really, really good, but First Class was fantastic.
Yeah, I mean,
it worked, and it even worked in a cameo that didn't annoy me.
Oh, with Hugh Jackson.
Yeah, I thought that was I thought that was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, that was a great little bit, and Michael Fassbender was awesome, and I loved the '60s Bond movie vibe it had.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they definitely were nodding back to the Ken Adam design of the old Bond films.
Yeah. Well, and they nailed it to where I think that they did it as right as they could, because I absolutely was on the side of Magneto.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, throughout that film, I was like, this guy is right. I mean, he is straight up right. With what he's seen and what he's gone through, he knows stuff that Xavier doesn't
know. Well, he's seen the side. Here's the thing: is Xavier has had a very comfortable life up in the halls of academia and in the lap of luxury. And you know, the movie is quick to remind us of this. And and whereas Magneto has seen the worst humanity has to offer.
Yes,
and so
he
has. Just like, you know, I'm sorry, I'm not going to take it. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, and that I don't trust humanity. I have seen this. I'm going to do what needs to be done. This man is an absolute evil, and I am going to. I'm going to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic.
And the way he finishes him off,
was really well done.
Yeah, Kevin Bacon was fun as hell as Sebastian Shaw.
Oh yeah, Bacon was fantastic. I got to say though, I've been a fan of Fassbender ever since I saw him in Hunger.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that movie is so intense, but that movie has the longest take, like the longest single shot ever, I believe, in film.
Really? Because longer than anything Bellatar's done or anything like
it's
that?
It's got a 17-minute shot.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. And it's a set shot of a conversation. But it is a 17-minute long conversation that's done in a single shot.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really pretty moving.
Yeah, that's been one that's been on my list to see for a while. But yeah, I mean, I can't remember when the first time I noticed Michael Fassbender was.
The first time I noticed Michael Fassbender, I could say pretty clearly was in what's it called? Inglourious Basterds.
I mean, I noticed him there. I think I can't remember if I saw him in that first or.
I know that he was in Band of Brothers, but he didn't jump out because there's so much.
Well,
in
yeah,
it.
That's like bunch of dudes in military garb.
No one stood out a whole lot in that. I mean, he was in 300, but I haven't seen all of that.
Well, yeah, I didn't notice him in that either because it's like the Band of Brothers syndrome. Lots of guys. Exactly. Exactly.
But yeah, that was really the first thing that I was aware of him in. But it's. X-Men First Class, I was so wildly impressed with. Sherlock Holmes, the new one, Clarkson and I talked about this some, and we'll talk about it again.
I saw it.
But screw it, we're going to do it. It is a movie that completely forgot that it had Sherlock Holmes in it for about the middle third.
You know what it is? It's Tomorrow Never Dies, steampunk style. Same exact plot. I did not like it. You know, it had a lot of. I actually got sleepy during the middle act in the theater. I almost fell asleep during the big like action set piece where, where they're running through the woods and they're firing cannons.
And it was also very obviously a middle set piece.
And here's another thing is like. You know, the joy of the first Sherlock was the relationship between Sherlock and Watson. And in this movie, they completely rehash everything from that film.
Right.
Except not as good. Like, it's, again, Watson's getting married. Oh, but I still want you around, Watson. So I'm going to use my severe like, was it? What does he have, like Asperger's or Tourette's or something?
Yeah, yeah, it's essentially it's kind of an Asperger's spectrum type disease.
I don't know why I said Tourette's, but yeah, I mean, they rehashed that completely.
And I will say the problem I had is, if you know Sherlock Holmes at all, the ending of it is telegraphed during the first 20 minutes.
Yeah.
The minute that the word Rickenbach is spoken, you're like, okay, I know how this ends. Granted, Jared Harris was very good.
Yeah, but no complaints with him as Moriarty.
They completely forgot what the movie was supposed to be. They forgot that Sherlock Holmes was in it.
Yeah.
And then at the end it was like, oh, we have to cram a whole bunch of stuff in here that reminds us of that. And I didn't care for it needed to be more of it.
Yeah.
You know, we needed to see more of it. And granted, they did do some neat shit at the end, but boy, that middle just died.
Yeah. I mean, the moment I got interested was during that final bit.
Yeah.
And I do like in these movies how Sherlock kind of thinks out the fight ahead of time and, you know, and all that stuff. But yeah, it was just too little too late. I mean, it was just a Bond film at this point. But it is the exact same plot from Tomorrow Never Dies. And Moriarty is, I thought, he's one of the iconic villains in literature.
Oh, God,
and
yes.
I thought he deserved better. And no fault of Jared Harris. You know, the script needed to give him something better to do.
There was a fight scene between them that was utterly brilliant.
Yes, yes.
Absolute genius. So I do give credit there.
Yeah.
But all in all, it wasn't that great.
Nope.
And, I mean, that's... I don't really know what else to say on that. I mean, it just sort of fell apart at the end.
Yeah, no, it just... I saw it and quickly forgot about it.
Right,
and
yeah.
And almost fell asleep during it, which is a bad thing. Very bad thing.
Right, but, right.
So you also saw
Dragon Tattoo.
Yeah, which I saw that.
Very good, but it's one where I knew exactly what to expect. It didn't blow me away. The parts that worked really well, but you know, it's okay.
I thought it was a good standard pulp thriller.
Yes,
it's getting a lot more heaped onto it than necessarily it is.
Yes.
You know, I haven't seen the original, so I can't compare the two. But I thought it was just a good standard pulp thriller.
Yeah.
And full stop. You know,
that's pretty dead on. Yeah.
It's nothing completely special. It gets a little muddled at times, but it swims its way out of it.
Right.
But I saw that. I saw.
I liked it fine. I did. I enjoyed it
too.
Quite a bit. I thought it was a very good movie, but.
But I saw 10-10.
How was that?
It's all right. It's okay. It's the best Indiana Jones movie in a long time.
Okay. what I remember is like the Hollywood Saloon did an episode about it, and they kind of took some folks to task where it's like, I don't know what this is. Why do I want to see? And they're saying, what? So we have to have movies based off stuff that we know. And I think my issue, it's something that I've said on the Film Thugs many times. It's that I know of Tintin and have spent my entire life kind of actively not giving a crap about it.
Yeah, I mean, I saw some of the Tintin cartoons when I was a kid and thought I was like, oh, that's a thing.
Yeah,
I was
I always thought that the dog was Tintin.
Like Rin Tin Tin?
Yeah, well, I mean, what makes more sense? That the boy's name is Tintin or that the dog's name is Tintin? I stand by that it makes more sense. it's okay. It looked cool, but I wasn't out of my head over it. If it comes on a place where I can see it, I'll watch it.
Yeah, no, definitely check it out at some point. It's not one I would say run out to the theater and see. Oh my God.
Right.
But
right.
It you know, it's way, you know,
it strikes
it's
me that it's
not made by the same guy who made Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. You know?
Yeah. It strikes me as being probably a lot like Super 8 in that it's like, I'm glad I saw it, but I'm also glad I didn't rush out and see it.
Yeah, well, you know, I didn't really care for Super 8.
I thought it was, I mean, at best, it was okay.
Mm-hmm. No, there are definitely, it has very good things in it. I will concede
yes,
that. At the end of the day, my problems with it sort of drowned out everything else. But with 1010, here's my thing with 1010, is it looks stunning.
Right.
And Spielberg is a much better director than Robert Zemeckis in that he can work. Like, Robert Zemeckis, when I was talking about this with the guy I saw it with, Zach Parks,
uh-huh.
And he was talking about how when Robert Zemeckis used mocap with Polar Express, you know, he kind of shows us the shot of a ticket floating through the air, and it's typical Zemeckis in that it's just Zemeckis jerking off with the technology.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Whereas with Spielberg, he really uses the tools to tell the story.
Uh-huh.
And he does it very well, and... But the problem with 1010 is that it's an adventure movie, but it's also a cartoon.
Uh-huh.
And so there is kind of a glass ceiling as to how thrilling and impressive it can be. Like,
because
there's this chase scene in the movie that is all one take, and it's brilliant, like, in terms of how it's realized conceptually and how it's executed. But it doesn't knock your socks off, especially, like, seeing, like, Indiana Jones ride a tank off a cliff is way more thrilling than that big, intricate shot, because it's something that's actually happening. Whereas this, like, if you were doing that in real life, which it would be impossible because of the way the camera moves and how it's orchestrated, but if you were to see something similar in real life, it would be far more impressive than that. Because I'm not saying, oh, it's easy, it's in a computer, because it's not. But
And no matter how good, like, because of video games and because of all of the CGI that we've seen, it will never, ever, ever compare.
Right. It just,
because you feel like I'm seeing a video game.
Exactly. I mean, at the end of the day, it's just a cartoon, and it's not, it doesn't thrill me. It makes me go, oh, wow, that's interesting. It doesn't, but this is an adventure movie. I want to be thrilled, you know, and it's something that it's a set piece that would otherwise be thrilling. But, you know, it's got a great cast. You've got, Jamie Bell, Andy Serkis, Simon and Pegg and Nick Frost.
Andy Serkis is going to become so big without anyone knowing what he looks like.
I know. I've only seen him act in, like, one movie, The Cottage, this little horror movie. But he was apparently, he was in some rock and roll movie that was supposed to be great.
Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll.
Which is apparently great. I don't have
it. Yeah, I've heard fantastic things about, and I'm going to check it out. It's on Instant. I've been meaning to watch it for ages, but it's one of those that I never have.
Mm-hmm.
And it's for no reason other than just I haven't.
Right.
And so, no big deal.
But 1010 was good, but it's not as good as, there's a glass ceiling as to how good it can be, and I think it hits it, you know?
Right. And that's an odd situation to be in, because to me, you know, stunts have always been about, and always will be about, like, the thrill that you get from seeing that shit happen. And at first, the CGI was neat. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, that's kind of cool. But it very, very, very quickly went from that into, no, it didn't, no.
Yeah.
It's not real. What I'm seeing is fake. And I don't have the emotional response to it, because I know that there's no one who's in danger here.
Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah, I mean, you're not going to hear about somebody getting killed on the mocap set. You know?
Exactly.
Well, not that I want that to happen, but
it's to say that it doesn't have an overall negative effect is ludicrous.
Yeah.
You know, cuz you need that. Because it adds to the energy of it being, it's like, why I don't think that film versions of plays work as well. You know, because if you're not there and seeing it, I mean, part of the big deal mm-hmm. of seeing a play is, wow.
Yeah.
That, you know, that was there, you know? Yeah, that was...
When you watch a film version of a play, it can never be anything more than a very unimaginatively shot movie.
Exactly, you know? Yeah. And I mean, from having done plays and all that stuff, you know you're not going to see someone screw up. I mean, there might be an error, you know, but you're not going to see it. But there's that reality of, wow, anything can happen.
Yeah.
And then that gets taken away. And with a stunt, it adds to the energy of the performance. And I think that having a stunt really performed.
Yes.
Adds a lot to the energy of the stunt. It adds a lot to the energy of the film. It adds a lot to the energy of everything. And it makes it something that you can much more easily take seriously. Because the fact that you're looking at it going, wow, someone could have died mm-hmm. doing that. I mean, this could have killed someone.
Mm-hmm.
That, oh my God, that pulls so much from you.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, with that whole elaborate sequence in 10-10 will never be as impressive as James Bond driving a boat over some Louisiana sheriffs in Live and Let Die.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Exactly. There's an energy, an excitement, mm-hmm. a real just kind of, oh boy, this is cool. You know, what I'm seeing is cool.
Yeah. So, but yeah, 10-10, it. Wait, you know, I'd wait for it. I wouldn't rush out to see it. There's plenty of movies to go see. And I also saw Mission Impossible as well.
I really liked it.
I was kind of lukewarm on it.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, if you look at it, well, first off, something we talked about on the show that was lost. I don't know if there's any job on this planet that gets more of a bullshit treatment on film.
Oh, then spies.
Spies.
If you want spying, watch Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Well, it's like no matter what, like there's a reason spy museums aren't more popular. You know, because there's only so many times you see, here's a camera that we hid in this.
This is something we attached to this guy, so he could.
Yeah,
here's
a gun that we hid in this too. It's like. No, this is boring.
See this umbrella? We use this to poison a Russian operative with radiation.
Yeah, and it just doesn't have. But I honestly think that the stunt sequences in Mission Impossible mm-hmm. and the chase sequences were so good.
Oh, here's the thing. I thought the stunts, the chases, all of that, the suspense was all top form. You know, tip top stuff. It's the film as a whole, though. I felt
It was very repetitive.
I thought MI3 was a better realized as a entire film. You know, like the villain in this was pretty faceless. His motivations were pretty,
And at some point, the Mission Impossible group has to stop falling apart.
Yeah.
Because it's like every damn movie, we have to disavow you. Yeah, you got to disavow. It's fall apart. There's a mole.
Oh,
there's a problem.
You're a fugitive now again.
Yeah, it's a little. Come on, let's pull this together. But I enjoyed it. The scenes. I thought that the it's one where the stunt stuff. I kind of pushed a lot of shit aside because of how cool the action scenes
were. The stuff in Dubai
it.
Was phenomenal.
And
you know, the parking garage and all that, all good. All that stuff was good.
Yeah. I'm probably going to have to go back and amend my list because I realized that I put this one on it. Cause I did really enjoy the hell out of it.
Mm-hmm.
For my top 10, I put this on it, but I realized I left Source Code off.
Ah.
And I think that that's one where I just can kind of switch them.
Yeah.
Because I think Source Code is a remarkably better film.
I still need to see that.
I think you'd like it a lot.
I probably would too.
There's a lot of things in it that you'll sort of see coming,
mm-hmm.
but that I don't think makes it worse.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I definitely want to check it out. I like the concept behind it. So
yeah, it's very cool. And like, I am a big fan of Duncan Jones, mm-hmm. but I think that it's not something where it's an unreasonable fandom. He out of the shoot has made two quite exceptional films.
Moon's a film I respect more than I like, but I respect it very much. You know,
and that's where I am with it, is the guts that it took. For that's going to be my calling card. That's me coming out of the shoot here.
Yep.
That took some guts to do, because he could have gone much, much, much safer in the sci-fi genre, but didn't.
I'm glad that directors like him and other directors like Danny Boyle and people like that, especially since Duncan Jones comes from the generation that grew up with Star Wars.
Yeah.
I'm glad that science fiction is getting away from Star Wars, and getting away from, if it's science fiction, it also has to be action.
Yes.
You know, I'm really glad that science fiction is getting away from sort of the way Star Wars set it back. I mean, Star Wars is a good film, but it also kind of set the genre back, you know, 25 years.
Oh, totally.
Years.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, it defined that the genre had to be a lot of badow badow.
Yeah, it's all about lasers and spaceships and hoopajoob and
exactly. And it's something that I enjoy. I mean, don't get me wrong; those are fun, but it is kind of neat to see it handled in the way that it's handled.
Yes,
you know that we're gonna do it a little different here. It's not gonna be. You know, it's I don't know. I think that it in many, many ways, it changed the definition of sci-fi for most folks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we got away from hard sci-fi, and I think that
like all of a sudden Star Trek was boring, you know?
Exactly.
I've been watching that, all the old episodes of Star Trek.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Really.
How are they?
Oh, I love them. You know, well, they're pretty dated, but they're still good stories, really well written. And I rewatched most of the old movies, almost done with 6, so.
Oh, cool.
The only one that is completely terrible is 5.
Yeah.
Oh, man, it's bad. But I watched it last night, and not going to get into it, but.
Right. But I think that when you get into the overall use of stunt stuff, like, I think part of what really impressed me going back to Mission Impossible 3 is the fact that, you know, even though there was safety equipment to hell and back, Tom Cruise stepped out of that window.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There are photographs. I've seen photographs of him while shooting it, just like running around on that building. And I'm just like, Tom Cruise is a let's jump in and do this guy.
Yeah. You know? And for whatever you could say, that's a guy who, for whatever anyone says about anything, blah blah, the credit that gives the audience, that's, you know, because there are a lot of people who are like, oh, just phoning in, but the fact that he basically says there are people that are spending their money on this, I'm going to give you a show.
Yeah,
it's like I felt like when Henry Rollins talks about seeing Kiss in concert,
mm-hmm.
that you've got all these people that, you know, you got these motherfuckers out there nowadays who are like, oh, I'm going to play this, but I'm not really into it. And then when you see a band where the guitarist takes the solo, you know, I'm not just going to play the solo, I'm going to take the solo. That's amazing to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I am really into it. And that, to me, Tom Cruise is, he's like Kiss.
Yeah.
He will take the solo. He will give you that, here, you paid to see us. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that, you don't get that.
No, and Tom Cruise really is cool. One of the last movie stars, you know, and last true movie stars, you know.
Yeah, and he is the biggest.
Mm-hmm.
It's so weird. There's no one who's even close to being the level of movie star that man is.
No. Like, a lot of people talk about George Clooney in terms of star, but I don't consider George Clooney to be a movie star.
Yeah, yeah, he's still in that.
His movies don't make the kind of money that movie stars should bring in.
Yeah, he's a very good actor, and you know, a big name. But yeah, there is definitely there's a difference.
And I saw The Descendants. I saw you put that on your list, and I like that.
Oh, it's such a good movie. Yeah, and he is fantastic in it.
I think it's one of his best performances for sure.
Yeah,
because I have a hard time getting lost in a Clooney performance. I mean, he's very good, but I almost got lost in his performance in The Descendants. I think I saw him disappear a bit in Oh Brother Where Art Thou.
Yeah.
And I think Solaris also.
Right.
I didn't really care for the film, but I thought he did a great job conveying just complete isolation and an inability to function in the real world. And you know, I thought he did a great job with that. I watched both the Solaris movies and there couldn't be more different interpretations of the same story.
Like, but he really what I like about Clooney is that he gives you a goofy kind of accessibility.
Mm-hmm.
Like Tom Cruise, because of the movie star thing, can't do that.
Yeah.
Like Tom Cruise straight cannot do that. But Clooney is still in a position where he's able to let me go ahead and I'll just do this. Mm-hmm. I'll be wacky. Because there are scenes
I'll build a chair with a bobbing dildo.
Exactly. Well, I mean, even beyond that, there's like the scene where in The Descendants, where he's running after the guy.
Oh my gosh!
And you see it, but the goofiness of his expression. Tom Cruise couldn't pull that goofiness off, not for lack of his ability, but are you really gonna buy it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you really gonna buy him in that part? And no, you're not.
Unless he goes so broad, like in Tropic Thunder or
yes,
something.
Yes, but even then, it works because you don't know it's him.
Right.
So, yeah.
You have the, is that fucking Tom Cruise moment?
Exactly,
you know?
That's exactly what it is. Like, oh my god, that was him. That's incredible.
Yeah. Well, all right, let's get into this, the releases, because we're like 45 minutes in.
Yeah, but what the hell? It's free,
yeah.
People.
Yeah.
You know, we gave you more free entertainment than you wanted. all right, so yeah, let's look at what we've got, coming up here, because there's some good ones. The first off, have you seen Moneyball?
No, I wanted to.
I really like Moneyball.
I know, I saw you put it on your list.
Yeah, and well, it's because I enjoy it. It's weird because for as much as it's about baseball, it's not.
Yeah.
And so that's what is so fascinating to me about it is, wow, they made a baseball movie that's not really about baseball.
Oh yeah, and you know that's what I read from a lot of people who like couldn't give less of a shit about baseball, but it's,
right.
It's a movie about, you know, reinventing the wheel in order to get problem solved, you know.
Yeah, uh-huh. And I mean Brad Pitt and everyone in it does a really really outstanding job. I mean, there's a reality to it. There's a and I mean, for those who remember when it happened, oh my God, it absolutely, I remember when this was going down and it was, oh, there's no way this is going to, oh, there's no way, but shit, no, they absolutely changed the way sports is looked at.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fantastic, it's a fascinating look at how they did it.
Yeah, did you hear about the way Steven Soderbergh's version of this that didn't get off the ground?
No, I hadn't heard what the real difference was.
I've heard there was like going to be a lot of animation, and it was going to be kind of like drama, but kind of documentary too.
Uh-huh.
It was going to be like kind of weird and experimental, like Soderbergh does. But you know, but what they did with Brad Pitt and Jonah Hill and with Bennett Miller directing.
Yeah, I think that it's something where if you'd gone weird with it, I don't think it would have worked.
Yeah.
Because it's a very straightforward story, and I think messing with it too much would have looked like you were throwing stuff in to throw it in.
Yeah.
But it's really brilliant.
Well,
and
the non-baseball crowd too.
Oh,
whereas,
yeah.
I'm going to watch this experimental weird documentary about baseball. Nah.
Yeah. It's basically, for lack of a better term, for those who don't know, it's about a guy who hacked baseball.
Yeah.
Because baseball for 100-something years was really based off of this kind of odd, nebulous, bizarre gut instinct thing with scout saying, oh, he's got this great potential, he's got this great swing, this really sweet swing. Whereas they basically with this said, okay, what are his numbers?
Yeah.
He's got a beautiful swing, but he doesn't get on base. Mm-hmm. So, you know, or he hits a lot of singles and doesn't move into scoring position. Whereas this other guy has a terrible swing, but he gets on base like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So why on earth don't we work that? You know,
yeah.
Why on earth aren't we looking at who gets on base over all of these other things? Because that's, you know, and it totally changed the way that we looked at movies. It really, I mean, not movies, at baseball, yeah.
Changed the way we looked at cinema. I'm not sure how.
Yeah,
but.
And it then went into a lot of other sports, too. Because, you know, they looked at it, it's like, okay, we're losing somebody who hits, you know, we're losing somebody who hits, you know, who scores this many runs. Let's find somebody who averages that many runs scored.
Right.
It makes so much sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, okay, so we have enough money to get three people. Let's get three people. Like, okay.
Why not?
Yeah, it's really cool. It's really cool.
I need to catch up with it. That was one of the ones that I missed this year that I wanted to see.
I think you'd like it. I think you'd like it a lot.
I think I would dig it. Next up, we have another one that you're all over that I have not.
Oh, Boardwalk Empire. I'm still behind on this season, but it's a very, very good show.
Steve Buscemi stars in it, right? And
Mr.
Martin Scorsese directed a few episodes.
Scorsese's directed a few episodes, and I just love that. You know, it took Scorsese years to win an Oscar, and one movie, I mean, one episode of a TV show to win an Emmy.
Yeah.
I mean, really, he stepped right out of the bat and nailed it.
Yeah.
And it's measured and kind of slow at times, but it doesn't feel slow. It's far more of the Mad Men Breaking Bad school of TV than a lot of other things.
Well, when you say Breaking Bad, it makes me want to check it out because I'm all over that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So there it is. It's really, really good.
Yeah, I want to see it. And another one that I didn't see, Killer Elite. But
I didn't see it. It looked okay, but it didn't look like anything that really made me want to rush out and see
it. I was kind of like, okay, well, I like the cast, but the trailer didn't really tickle me. You know?
Exactly. I'm kind of in the same thing where it's like, boy, on one level, I think I'll really like this, but on another level,
And, you know, I like the cast because they're action stars that look like dudes, and
right.
As opposed to Taylor Lautner. You know?
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But, you know, it just, I'll probably, if it's on Netflix Instant, I'll watch it.
Right. Right. And I probably will too, but that's it. I can't really see me using even a rental on it. So.
No, not at all.
Yes.
Next, just because I can't believe this exists, Scorpion King 3, The Battle for Redemption.
With Billy Zane.
And Ron Perlman, baby.
Yeah, I mean, that just kind of, that kind of knocked me back a little bit. Wow, William Zane. But it's
and Kimbo Slice is in it.
Of course it
and,
is.
And Tamura Morrison.
This is just one of them odd fucking things that, of course it exists, of course it's there.
With Scorpion King 2, whatever. I flirted with watching Scorpion King 2 because it was directed by Russell Mulcahy,
mm-hmm.
the guy who did Highlander. So,
right.
I was like,
okay.
Maybe. Nah.
Maybe not. We'll see. Yeah, that's one of those properties that I'm amazed at how much they're milking out of. Cause I mean, to me, what's it called? The Mummy, that was one that was pushing it with the second film.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah. Somehow it wow.
I
really.
And just... I saw the third Mummy movie. And
oh, God.
It was horrible.
It looked horrible. It's one where I was in Europe when it came out, and my God, there were ads for it everywhere.
Jeez.
It was like that and Hancock.
Well, I didn't have to pay to see it, so I was like, well, I'll check this out.
Yeah, and it's really hard to pass up a chance to see something like that that you get a shot to see for complete
and
free.
I'm a big Jet Li fan, and I was like, well, yeah. Jet Li is the Mummy. That's going to be awesome. No, he's just a CGI monster most of the time.
Uh-huh. And that kills it, doesn't it?
So it's like you have a special effect in your movie named Jet Li.
Yeah.
And
you're using special effects instead of the talents of Jet Li.
I know it's the way Hollywood thinks, though. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, it's like all my like how my dad really he got really excited about some of the oh wow Jackie Chan, I really like his movies, and I'm like I understand totally why you like them, and a part of it is because you've never seen the Jackie Chan I know.
Mm-hmm.
Like. You know, I'd seen more Jackie Chan movies than I could count before he made, Rumble in the Bronx came out in the U.S., I'd seen like 15 Jackie Chan films.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is next level.
Yeah.
But then when he started doing stuff in America, I was like, God, for people who only know
Rush Hour.
American action movies, Jackie Chan's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah,
but for people who know, Project A, for people who know
police,
Operation, the police story movies, basically, here's how I look at it. If you refer to it as Operation Condor and Operation Condor 2, The Armor of God, then you don't know Jackie Chan the right way.
It's Armor of God and Armor of God, Operation Condor.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. If you don't know it that way, then it's like, you're getting some of it, but it's not the same. And it's not like I'm some bullshit hipster who's looking down his nose like, oh, I would love nothing more than to sit down and say, watch these with me.
Mm-hmm.
And let's really get your mind blown here. This'll change the way you look at a lot of stuff.
Well, and while we're on Jackie Chan, he has a new movie coming out.
Yeah, that 1911.
1911.
Which, from what I understand, is very different from what the typical Jackie Chan film is.
Yeah, it seems more like a kind of Chinese epic.
Yeah.
As opposed to, Jackie singing Canto pop songs and being drugged by a bus with an umbrella.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it has a very epic feel to it. It kind of looks in some regards like it will be more reminiscent of the original Red Cliff.
Yeah. I mean, and we've been getting a lot of these, China has always put out historical epics based on their history, but it seems like we've been getting a lot of bigger and bigger ones like with the Ip Man films.
Yeah.
And Red Cliff and such.
Have you seen the original Red Cliff? Like the one that's in two parts?
No, I haven't. I haven't even seen... I saw part of the cut-up one, and I kind of just... I didn't finish it, because it felt kind of messy. The action scenes were great, but it felt messy, and I was like, I'm going to wait and just watch the full shebang.
Right. The cut-up one, I remember seeing, like, it was one where, like, Harry Knowles had some, this thing's a piece of shit compared to the...
Oh, and he's, that's just that film nerd code, like this version.
No, but the thing is, it's like, I thought that way until I'd seen both of them, and after I saw the original, I was like, I don't know if I'd call the cut-up one a piece of shit, but the cut-up one is such a staggering disappointment that... I don't really know what to say.
Well, I could just tell that there was something missing, and I could tell they were putting in a lot of the money stuff, and I was just kind of like, I want to wait and catch the full thing.
Yeah.
So I haven't caught up with it yet. Every time I see it at the store, I almost buy it, but usually it's a little too expensive for me to make the leap.
What got me about it was that Blockbuster, I went there. That one of the another reason I hate Blockbuster is I went there to buy some previously viewed movies. I was like, hey, this will be a good way to get, you know, just some cool Blu-ray movies. They had The Battle of Red Cliff International Version Part 1 previously viewed on Blu-ray for sale for $14.
Just Part 1?
Yeah, and Part 2 on sale for $14. You can buy both parts together off Amazon brand new for $17.
Yeah. And They're selling them separately.
I am now officially like forever completely done with Blockbuster.
Well, that's the thing is, like, Blockbuster, their death does not, like, some people are like, oh man, it's the end of an era. Blockbuster was one of those things where they quickly muscled their way into becoming the only game in town, and then they proceeded to treat their customers like shit.
Yeah, I like, worked there for a period when it was like $3.50 for a new release due tomorrow by midnight, and $3.50 for an older movie due tomorrow by midnight.
What?
Yeah, for a while, Blockbuster was doing that. And then they went into that no late fees lie.
Oh, that was a complete, that was a lie.
But yeah. But it was one of those things where they wiggled that wording where it's like, no, it's at no point are you ever charged a late fee. You are charged a sell-through price and a restocking fee, but none of those are technically late fees. So it's like, screw this. That's when I stepped away. I've only been to a Blockbuster like twice in the past 10 years.
Yeah.
And the last time I went, it was weird because have you been to a Blockbuster recently?
It's been a few months. Last time I went was when the one across the street from my apartment was closing. And so I was, you know, basically a vulture picking away at its corpse.
It's such a weird experience now.
Oh, the employees there couldn't give less of a shit.
Well, and not just that, but it's like they sell posters and like they had, Twilight flip flops, but like they just had all of this crap.
Yeah.
And some movies. And my problem with Blockbuster was the fact that they predatorially went after small places.
Oh, definitely.
Shut them down and then stopped offering the shit that you could get there.
Yeah.
Like, I am so lucky to live in Austin because we've got Isla Video and Vulcan Video. So Isla Video, Vulcan Video, and what's that place called? It's Encore. So if you want to rent something unusual or different or something that's not just your regular mainstream, you can. But go to Blockbuster, and no, they're not going to have it.
Well, and Blockbuster, one thing that was terrible about them was that they actually started fucking with the way movies were made. Because you can't do this, this, and this because Blockbuster won't stock it.
Yeah,
we have
exactly.
to make the film so that Blockbuster will stock it. You know, it's just like Blockbuster would dictate what they would stock, and if the studio wouldn't do that, then sorry, we're not going to stock your movie, and that's going to cost you money, you know, because we're Blockbuster and we're huge. But like, I mean, like they've kind of started their own Redbox thing and stuff, and you know, some people are like, oh man, I'm going to try out the new Blockbuster thing. You know, I will never give them business ever because they've been such a shit. They're just such a shitty company, and they are so terrible.
Yeah, like before, I didn't have problems going to the stores because it's like, yeah, the company sucks, but there are people working here.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was one of them, and I know that they disagree with the way stuff's done, but the box thing, there's nobody's job is really, you know, you're not affecting anyone with that. But the thing that got me was we lobbied and got some stuff changed at the store where I worked.
Nice.
Because they, for a while, had, you had to do the, if you liked this, then you might also enjoy this.
Oh, God.
And the only way that they would do it was they said it has to be by the star of the movie who's in it. And so you had me, there was me and another guy who was just total film nerd like I was. And we put together a wall where it was if you enjoyed Leaving Las Vegas, you would like Valley Girl, Adventures in Babysitting, The Karate Kid, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and my store manager was like, wait, that's... I said, no, we're doing exactly what we were told to do.
Yeah. It's by the star. What you got a problem with? Rumble
yeah,
fish.
Give, yeah, give me the ability to do what we said, which was we will spend the time to put these together by genre.
Yeah.
And that finally, you know, we kind of did that. It was like, go ahead, you can do this. We were like, thank you. Thank you for letting us do this in a logical way. And it ended up actually being popular.
Yeah, of course.
But ours was the only store that did it.
Yeah, I know some other film guys who worked at Blockbuster, and they said it was really frustrating to have to recommend it by star. They said they always felt like idiots doing it, and that they were treating people like idiots.
Yeah. You know? Oh yeah. But we got to do what we needed to do there. But it's one that I don't feel bad, because I mean there was a while where there would be Blockbuster videos in areas. There were Blockbusters across the street from each other.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it's like Starbucks.
Yeah, yeah. But it was entirely done because they built a location there to squeeze a mom and pop out.
Yep. Get them out of there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, is this There Be Dragons? Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, it's the new Roland Hoffe film.
I'm not familiar with him.
He's the guy who did The Killing Fields and The Mission.
Oh, okay. Wow.
And he hasn't done much in the years since. I think he was brought in to ghost direct in an attempt to save the Super Mario Brothers movie.
Okay.
Because I think his special effects house was working on it, so
okay.
It doesn't seem that weird. And I think he did a really crappy horror movie called Captivity. But but There Be Dragons looks more like it's more in line with those first two films. And the storyline sounds very it's very much like an epic Spanish thing involving saints and the Spanish Civil War.
Okay.
The plot does not look like something that can be easily encapsulated by somebody who hasn't seen it, which I haven't. But I included it because it looks interesting.
Uh-huh.
But it involves Saint Jose Maria Escriva. So,
Okay.
There you go. But but that I thought that one looked interesting, so I included it. There's one I forgot to put on the list here. That I think bears mentioning is Higher Ground, the directorial debut of Vera Farmiga.
Oh, really? That could be interesting to check out. I enjoy Vera's work.
Yeah,
so.
She stars and directs, and it's about her growing up in sort of a very religious community. But it doesn't look like a movie about how horrible, like, you know, oh my gosh, a small religious community, it's going to be oppressive and terrible. But I think it's a kind of a nuanced look at growing up in a very stern Christian community, but not stern, not stern in a negative way, but in a very, it's restrictive.
Uh-huh.
But it I saw the trailer, and it looks good. It looks like a very positive movie.
Oh, cool.
So I want to see that. I forgot to put that on the list.
All right.
So that comes to video this week.
All right.
What do we got next?
When Harry Met Sally?
Yeah. On Blu-ray.
I like it. That's one that is so hard to really really view objectively anymore because it's gotten so blown up into
it's a big pop culture touchstone.
Exactly. Yeah. To where it's not really a film anymore. It's this thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it's at its heart, you know, Nora Ephron wrote it and, she's good sometimes. Sometimes she's not. And this is one of the times where I think she's very good.
Yeah, and it really hit that whole, you know, can men and women be friends?
Yeah, can men and women just be friends? Like, I think the answer is a little easier when somebody's already in a relationship or something. I don't know. But
I think that's one of those things where it all just straight up depends.
Yeah, definitely.
But it's a It's one where I think that she did a very good job of writing the male character in it and the male perspective.
Yeah.
I think that it was I was very impressed by that.
I agree, and it didn't caricature it, you know, the way like it didn't degenerate into Whitney Cummings. Am I right, ladies? Humor.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah, yeah.
It's very gives a very honest perspective in that regard. But it's a funny rom-com. You know, you've probably seen it. If you haven't, now's a good time to do so.
Right. Yeah.
But, and next up, we have one that I think I would probably rather get punched in the dick than see.
Is it that film Socialisme?
Socialisme by Jean-Luc Godard.
Starring Patti Smith.
Amongst others.
I know. It just... I've never really been a big fan of the kind of French New Wave stuff. I like it fine in certain regards.
I like Truffaut a lot more than Godard.
Yeah, Truffaut makes it more personal, which I enjoy. Godard gets a little...
Here's the thing about Godard. He's a film critic. He's not a filmmaker.
Oh, yeah.
And
yes, uh-huh.
I think the closest he ever came to being a storyteller was Breathless, you know, and that's because Truffaut wrote The Treatment. I think Godard's films are more about films than they are films, you know,
right.
And about
uh-huh.
genre and about this and that. And I think if you were to say that to him, he'd probably be like, yeah, you know,
uh-huh.
yeah. But film Socialisme looks, or however the fuck you say it. Looks very, it's like on a cruise ship in the Mediterranean, and there's all this stuff with quotes, and like there's like, you know, like lots of different languages in it and no subtitles. Or if there is a subtitle, it just says a few random things.
Right.
It sounds very maddening to watch. And it sounds like just a weird essay. I've heard it's like about how film can be anything, or movie can be anything you want it to be. And
it just seems like
stuff,
it's really
just kind of like
it seems really just on its on all level it seems very pretentious.
Yeah, I mean it seems like it when you I heard the thesis behind it is that like art can be whatever you want it to be and it's up for interpretation and blah blah blah. I'm like, yeah, okay. I get that. So I don't really need to see the film.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's an odd situation to find yourself in when you're looking at it. It's like, okay, why do I need to watch this?
Did you see the trailer for this movie?
No, I have not. I hadn't heard anything of it.
It's the entire movie fast forwarded. It presented at a rapid rate in like, you know, a minute and a half or something.
That's just one of those things that seems far too... Yeah, it's just way too cute.
Yeah, no.
You know, way too self-aware in an annoying way.
Kind of hipstery. I mean, well, not totally, but Godard, like, I don't know. Sometimes I just feel like he's, I feel like he's fucking with me sometimes. And
yeah.
This is one of those times.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm sure that this one will appeal to, like, people in, like, getting their doctorate in film theory only. And I think that's about it. And within the same...
It just... Everything about it just seems so...
Yeah.
You know?
I'm going to smoke a cigarette and eat a baguette.
Exactly.
But so in the same vein as film Socialisme, we have Legally Blonde on Blu-ray.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Ugh. I've seen it once... Because it was on when I went over to my friend Dan and Amber's place. And my friend Dan is like, oh, this movie's hilarious for all the wrong reasons. And because it was basically, he was basically saying, it's not funny the way that they want it to be.
Okay.
It's just stupid. And I watched it. I was like, yes, this is stupid.
It's stupid. It's kind of a guilty pleasure for me, though. I mean, I'm not going to pretend I didn't enjoy myself watching it.
Right.
It's not good. And Legally Blonde 2 is appallingly bad.
It just seems that. It feels that way up front. Like, right off the bat, it just feels like everything about it feels annoying.
But, you know, if this movie were to come on TV, I'd probably watch it. You know, okay. I kind of enjoy it. I acknowledge that it's dumb and silly and all that stuff, but whatever reason, it just, I don't know. It's like really bad junk food. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
We get a lot of. It seems like they just decided to shotgun us with rom-coms this week. We also get Never Been Kissed on Blu-ray.
I didn't see it.
I saw it years ago. It's exactly what it looks like. It's Drew Barrymore. It's one of those. Oh, it's almost got like a. It's the premise is terrible. You know, Drew Barrymore is like this girl who was really ugly in high school and stuff, and she's given this assignment to like blend in at a high school, like kind of like, you know.
Yeah, go undercover.
And she, you know, but she gets all hot and stuff and falls in love with a guy, but he doesn't know she's not who she says she is, you know, or something.
Yeah, I saw a part of it where it was like on TV once where it was just like, oh, that seems disturbing to me that it's this like, you know, that flirting with the teacher and the teacher flirting back because it is an adult woman.
Yes.
Flirting with him, but again, that's something I take real personal when it comes to that shit. Like, no, that's not fucking doesn't okay really at work. All.
Yeah. But yeah, that's kind of a dumb movie.
Right.
I saw it years ago though. And I also saw the next one, Shallow Hal on Blu-ray.
Shallow Hal is okay.
It has funny things in it.
But what I will say. I say this pretty solidly. I watched Hall Pass the other night. I had no idea that was a Farrelly Brothers movie.
Yeah, it is.
I really didn't know and was kind of thrown a little bit by it because it was just, I was able to actually, I didn't even pay attention to the credits enough to see that it was them, but I spotted all of their usual people.
Yeah.
So I was able to tell, like, oh, okay, this is a fucking Farrelly Brothers movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so that it didn't affect it, but there was shit that I was looking for because of it. And it really kind of, it didn't annoy me, but I was like, and that's what Shallow Hal is, one of those things that tries to add, like, force this heart into the gross-out humor, which, I guess, you know, gross-out humor's got its place
and it has a lot of, like, really shitty, like, easy, overweight person humor.
Yeah.
Fat person humor, like, you know... When you see fat people depicted in movies, they're always eating shit.
Yeah.
They're always got food in their mouth. And this is, you know, you don't have to be like that to be overweight. You know, you know, to be as big as she is, you know, it's just played so broad. It's ridiculous. Like, and it gives people this perception that fat people are always stuffing their faces when really the problems are much different. And much more nuanced. But it's got a lot of that cheap stuff. And of course, you know, you have a Gwyneth Paltrow in a fat suit. So it's even more.
But at least they went the try to make her like a person. And not just like the time that it always bugged me was whenever they do it on Friends.
Oh, God, with Monica. Holy shit, that's the worst.
That was always like the most insulting depiction. Oh. But at least with this, they really made Gwyneth Paltrow such a likable character.
Yes, they did. They did. I mean, she's not someone you're supposed to just laugh at.
Uh-huh.
I'm glad you brought up Friends because that is the most hideous depiction.
Right.
But, you know, it's an okay movie, I guess, for as far as the Farrelly Brothers movies go. They're pretty hit or miss.
Uh-huh.
And it's somewhere in the middle. And the next one is one... I've seen this one, too. Just Married, with Ashton Kutcher and Brittany Murphy.
Oh, God, that thing just looked...
Directed by Sean Levy.
And wasn't this one that was written by Sarah Silverman or something like that? Oh, no, that was What Happens in Vegas, I think.
Oh, really? She wrote that?
I think so. Yeah, Just Married was one that looked so, just from the previews, looked so, okay.
Yeah, it's a stupid romantic comedy. I saw it in high school with a girl I was dating, and I promptly forgot about it.
Yeah. It seems like a lot of these movies fall very, very much into that vein.
And this was back when Brittany Murphy had a career.
Yeah.
Where she tragically died mysteriously.
Yeah. Which is, because I know folks, I've got a friend who worked with her on King of the Hill and said she was just the sweetest girl.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's rough.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly, though, this is one of those movies that is so much a part of that designed to be enjoyable and make money and then literally be forgotten. I mean, it is literally designed that after you finished watching it, you're not, I mean, hell, the fact that you said Just Married, I'm like, oh, that's that one with Cameron Diaz in it. No, it's not.
That's the one, that, I mean, that's what Sean Levy makes, though. That you know, like, not, that's, I'm not going, oh, that's what he makes. I think Sean Levy sucks. But that's the kind of movies he makes. He just makes, like, movies people see and go, oh, yeah, that was good, and then they never talk about it again. Like Night at the Museum 1 and 2.
Right.
Like Real Steel. Sorry, I know a lot of people this year loved Real Steel. That movie's not very good. Okay.
Well, and again, that's one where, as I've said it before, if I could take a DVD of that and mail it to myself as a, you know, 12-year-old, that'd be the greatest thing ever. I'm okay with the concept of it now, but I just don't really care.
Well,
that
much. I just hated the kid in it. Hated him.
Yeah, that's one that's really difficult to make work.
Hate it.
Wow. Well, it's difficult to make something like this work, especially with a kid in it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the kids, by and large, come off kind of annoying.
Yeah, well,
in movies.
I know it's tough to do, but that kid was like, I don't know, he had like Asperger's or something.
Yeah.
No, he was real. And no, I'm not insulting the people of the world who... I know some people who have Asperger's. I'm not insulted, but this kid felt like a broad depiction of somebody with Asperger's.
Yeah, where something, you know, just is off, and they're letting it happen as though,
I mean, he's like,
well, they're trying to play it as something other than an annoying person.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that's really difficult because, you know, when a child is annoying in a film, it's very difficult to view them as anything other than an annoying child.
Yes.
But yet, for some reason, when they put a kid like that in one of these movies, it's like they're expecting everyone. Either there's a studio exec who thinks that it's charming, or they're really thinking, oh, no one else is. They're going to find him charming because it's a kid.
Mm-hmm.
That strikes me as the only explanation for it. But, you know, what do I know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, anyways.
But yeah, just it's such an odd list of, like, some stuff on here that's really pretty cool, and some things that are just,
Yeah, I mean, we definitely have a lot of rom-coms out this week.
Yeah,
such as When Harry Met Sally and Film Socialisme, but
right.
But right. You know, I'll definitely want to check out Moneyball.
I think you'd like it a lot. I mean, like I said, it's not, you don't have to be a baseball fan to like it. It just sort of works on its own level, and you know, it's a very clever hack the system type thing, you know.
And so, would that be your pick of the week?
Yeah, definitely. If looking at what's here, I would definitely put that as my pick of the week.
As far as my pick of the week goes, the only movie I've seen on here and really genuinely liked is When Harry Met Sally.
Uh-huh.
But you know, I've gone with stuff I haven't seen before, so I'm just gonna get behind your pick. Just Moneyball.
Well, and you know, now you've got a great chance to check it out.
Yeah,
I think you'll like it quite a bit.
Indeed,
because you know, like I said, it's clever. It's interesting behind the scenes stuff, because they mix, they do some cool things where they mix in this guy's, Brad Pitt's character's backstory. Cause his backstory is fascinating. Cause he was like this guy who could have gone to UCLA as like a basketball and baseball scholarship. But instead took a contract with the Mets and ended up getting basically just bouncing around a little bit before his career was over.
Yeah.
And it's really pretty fascinating to look at and see, wow, that's how, that's how it changes. Cause it really does. I mean, there is a professional sports is a really difficult, it's a difficult thing to make it in. And it's fascinating to look at it this way.
Yes.
So yeah, definitely worth the time.
I'm looking forward to seeing it, and I'll probably see 1911 if it comes on, or in Killer Elite if it comes on Instant. And
yeah,
and I need to catch up with Boardwalk Empire.
And
the rest, well,
yeah.
Or, really, actually, I do want to see There Be Dragons.
Yeah, it's Empire odd though, because
there's good
with
stuff
the,
out this week.
Yeah, but the chasm. This is one of those ones where it's like the chasm between the stuff that's good and the stuff that's bad is pretty. It's a pretty wide jump between the two. Yes. And so, yeah, there's that.
Indeed. Well, I guess that wraps it up for this week.
Yeah, I guess it does.
But, we were glad to finally be back after such a long hiatus.
Right.
We'll definitely be getting these out regular.
Oh, yeah.
Now that the holidays are finally
now
over.
The holidays are finally behind us.
And we look forward to a brave new 2012.
Yes, it'll be interesting. And if a culture who couldn't have figured out the wheel is to be believed, it's our last year.
Oh,
so.
Indeed. You know.
That's what I always go back to whenever people are, you know, oh, it's, you know, the Mayans said this. Like, the Mayans didn't fucking figure out how to use the wheel. So let's calm down.
Yeah, no, it's every, there's always, there, after this year, there's going to be another year. Because there's always a year or a day when the world is expected to end, and it's always bullshit. And it's going to be bullshit again. And the next time it happens, it's going to be bullshit then, too.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, it's not predetermined, sorry.
Why do we care when it ends? If the world ends, not a thing can be done about
it. Yeah, it's going to be... Did you see Melancholia?
No.
That's what that movie's about.
Yeah.
If the world ends, ain't much you can do about it.
Where are you going to go?
Oh, that's the brilliant part is the about that film. I'm not going to get too into it, but, it's... Oof. That is the question. Where can you go? Like, what can you do? Nothing.
No matter how many blankets or bottles of water you have, you're just staving off the inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
You know.
There's that.
But but I think 2012 is going to be a great year for movies. We've got new Christopher Nolan, we've got new Tarantino, we've got the Hobbit.
Yeah.
We've got new Paul Thomas Anderson. In theory, we're supposed to get another Terrence Malick, but knowing him, it'll probably be 2014 or something.
Right. But boy, if he does, I'd be really...
Oh, my God.
I'd be blown away by that.
I would be, too. But we're supposed to get a lot of good movies this year, so I'm thinking this is going to be a good year.
Oh, cool.
Oh, and Prometheus. Prometheus. Ooh.
Yeah. So it'll be a fun... It's going to be a fun year no matter what.
Yes. Well, and we'll be sure to guide you through it as far as what's coming out on video.
Right on, yeah. All and right. We'll check out, we'll be back with the Film Thugs next week.
Yes.
And, yeah, you guys have a lot of stuff coming up right now because, I mean, the Midnight Movie Cowboys, you're doing that stuff with Farmer, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, we have... Yeah, go to midnightmoviecowboys.com and check those out, because
We just dropped a show on Van Damme. We have a show on Rambo coming out tomorrow.
Oh, awesome.
So check that out. That's dropping tomorrow. I've heard it. It sounds great.
I really want to get on and record with you guys at some point, just because I haven't been recording as much as I want to lately.
Yeah.
You
know, we'll be doing something soon. We'll think of a topic and hit it up.
Because I've yet to do a full-on Cowboys.
Yeah, you have. Yeah, that's right. You haven't been on there.
We talked about doing some stuff for a while, but some of the logistics, because we wanted to involve Clarkson, became difficult. So
right.
I'll just say I'll be on it whenever you want me
okay.
to.
Okay. Well, we'll definitely – We've got a lot planned, but, you know, we'll definitely do that soon because, yeah, you know,
and you know me, I can drop onto any
show. Yeah, I know.
Like
you always tell me, whenever you want to record, just let me know.
I'll jump on. Like, well, what about this? Like, dude, I can talk through. I mean, hell, I sat in on my rediscovering the magic thing. I barely knew anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, yeah, I can, you know, I'll add something to the conversation.
Yes, indeed.
Yes.
But, glad to be back, and we're glad you're listening, so we'll catch you next week.
Yeah, catch you next week. Thanks a lot, guys.
Adios.
Bye-bye. It's your